Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th of May, Anno Domini 2013, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues.
And I'm breathing a sigh of relief that you guys are back this week.
You did a great job on Soundbite last week. I was very impressed.
Yeah, not even Soundbite. Bite.
Now, why is it that when I try to start a hangout,
one thing? Well, you two are still doing that. We should remind guys ahead of time. You get involved with the computers and everything else, and then you forget. Oh, it's Mother's Day, and it is tomorrow, so, you know, just a word of caution.
It may be a little late for next day shipping. You're going to pay an awful lot for delivery on Sunday.
Well, what you can do is just actually stop and buy some nice flowers.
At the Mini Mart gas station on the way home.
Anywhere. Some flowers are better than no flowers. I can't start a hangout. I don't know why.
I used to get flowers in front of the cemeteries because they were so pretty and beautiful and on the way home.
Okay, that's just, there's a certain sad thing
that's
going on.
That's too much information.
Well, I always felt sorry for the poor guy sitting there with the flowers all day long. Especially on hot summer days when you never knew when somebody was going to come by.
Yeah, exactly. There's about 6,000 Chrome instances running on my system, but none of them seem to be
the one
Hangout,
you want,
and I can't get a Hangout to start.
Nasty. And it was working fine earlier, right?
It was. I tried it this morning.
People ask that in the shop. Well, what happened? Why did it break? It was working fine yesterday.
Yeah.
Exactly. Things always work fine until they don't.
And they said, but I didn't have any warning. I tell folks, well, it's like a light bulb. You turn it on, you hope it's going to work, but sometimes, you know what? They pop.
It's the first thing to break is the early warning system on computers.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
I read a really cool story ages ago. I think it was Niven, about a guy.
Seriously, I can't start a freaking hangout.
Well, while you're working on it. It was a guy that every morning when he got to his office, he put his hand in the auto dock. And it, while it was measuring his blood chemistry and giving him the right antipsychotic medicine, it gave him a nice manicure. And then the little green light would turn on, and he knew he was done. And if there was a problem, the little red light would turn on. Well, apparently one day the little red light broke, and the guy assumed it was the green light that broke. So he knew how long to leave his hand in there. So he just so he eventually became a psychotic murderer and started chasing somebody down with a light sail. And that takes dedication to chase someone in a light sail on how slow they go. But then the Bussard ramjet, where they were collecting the hydrogen, the giant magnetic field, he could kill people with it. But it took decades, you know, to get relativistic speeds. But yeah. So you just assume that the green light broke, but it was really the red light that broke.
Yeah, right. All right. Before we get to the phones, let me read today's first news story. Gianna Chen was somewhat different from all the other researchers reporting on their work Thursday to more than 8,000 doctors at the Heart Rhythm Society meeting. Chen is 14, and her study, which found that Apple's iPad 2 can, in some cases, interfere with life-saving heart devices because of the magnets inside, is based on a science fair project that didn't even win her first place. The research offers a valuable warning for people with implanted defibrillators, which deliver an electric shock to restart a stopped heart, said John Day, head of heart rhythm services at Intermountain Medical Center in Murray, Utah, and chairman of the panel that reviews scientific papers to be presented at the Denver meeting. If a person falls asleep with the iPad on their chest, the magnets in the cover can accidentally turn off the heart device,
oh,
said Chen, a high school freshman in Stockton, California, whose father is a doctor. I definitely think people should be aware. That's why I'm presenting this
you
study.
You think?
Defibrillators, as a safety precaution, are designed to be turned off by magnets. The iPad 2 uses 30 magnets. 30 magnets to hold the iPad 2's cover in place. 30. No wonder the thing costs $700.
Well, no, this is just Apple's smart cover. There's like one magnet in the iPad and a whole bunch more in the smart cover itself.
While the iPad 2 magnets aren't powerful enough to cause problems when a person is holding the tablet out in front of the chest, it can be risky to rest it against the body, she found. An Apple spokesrobot declined to comment on the study, referring questions about iPad 2 safety to its online product guide. The guide does caution users about radio frequency interference, suggests that patients with pacemakers keep the iPad at least 6 inches away, and says they should be turned off in healthcare facilities when instructed by staff or posted signs. They're not saying it's the cover. They're saying it's the iPad. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is do you keep your iPad close to your heart? The choices are, of course, no, I want to live. And what is this iPad of which you speak? So far, we have 33 votes. Most of you, of course, have no idea what an iPad is. When you're done with that poll, you will have more to say. I know. So check the forums. One of the forums is poll discussion. And there is a topic there, 11 May 13. Do you keep your iPad close to your heart? And give us a call. How do you feel about iPads and heart implants? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
When the smart cover came out, it's a big deal as it is magnets, and it holds itself onto the iPad by magnets. And as you fold it up to turn into the easel and the stand, the magnets attract each other to create the stand. So one of the big teardown companies, iFixit, who's known for tearing down things, they took an X-Acto knife and X-rays and tore the whole thing apart and found where all the magnets were. Because as each of the folds, as it folds up to form a triangle, the folds have to have the right positive, negative, north, right, south magnets to hold together. And it was really, really interesting. So, and the other thing this company does is give ratings on how repairable a device is, because they sell parts to you, and they say it's not repairable at all.
You think?
Good. Because they had to cut the thing open with X-Acto knives.
Right. Well, and it's just a cover. It would certainly cost more to repair it than it would to replace it.
Yeah.
You know, some of those things, what do you expect?
And on the iPad itself, there are other magnets that catch the magnets in the smart cover. But I didn't know there were that many in the iPad itself. So, yeah, the iPad smart cover gets a repairability score of 0, with 10 being the easiest to repair.
Oh, here's my problem.
What?
I apparently can't open any new...
Your Google account's messed up.
I don't know what's going on.
You done broke it?
Is your Ethernet tight?
No, it's not even opening the... it's not opening the tab.
Hmm.
So it may not be that at all. It may be this thing is in some way messed up. All right, our first caller is Jay from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jay. What's your question?
Hi. I'm nervous for you guys because who do the soundbites guys call when they have a computer problem?
Yeah.
But I have a computer that a acquaintance made, built for me. It's Windows 7. And I guess it has all of the bells and whistles that a new computer is supposed to come with. But I'm getting I restart, and then I, as often as I can, because I hear that the page file can get filled up, so you're supposed to restart your computer as often.
But right.
But the computer will, every maybe 3 or 4 days, it'll just freeze and it doesn't do anything other than it freezes up every few days.
How much memory do you have in that machine?
How much memory? 4 gigs.
And it's Windows 7. Do you know if it's 64-bit?
It's 32-bit.
Okay, and it just freezes every couple of days. And this is a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
Do you have enough air flowing around it?
It's not in like a corner, if that's what you mean.
What's changed on it recently?
Or has it been doing this since you got it?
Yeah, any upgrades to it or what?
I mean, I have Windows, what is it, Essentials? And, you know, it runs the updater on a regular basis.
So just software updates, but you haven't done any major hardware updates?
Like add memory or new hard drive?
No, I don't even know how to do
that. Well, one of the issues, it may not be related to this, is that with 32-bit Windows, it can only access 3 gigs of RAM. So it doesn't matter how much RAM you actually have in the computer. Windows can only access like 3.2 gigs.
Yeah, it says four. I'm looking at the thing. It says 4 gigs, but 3.3 and a quarter usable.
Right. So you may want to upgrade to 64-bit Windows. That way you can address all of the RAM. And that's sort of where the page file issue comes into, that when the computer runs out of RAM, it swaps stuff out to disk. And the more programs you have running and the more frequently you open and close programs, the more frequently your swap file or page file has to page in and out. And that's what can cause performance issues. Usually what we joke about is eventually it gets so slow you reboot it anyway, or it'll crash and you reboot it, and that clears your page files. Mm-hmm. But that may be one issue that you may need to upgrade to 64-bit Windows. Now, which I don't think you can. You have to reinstall Windows completely.
Is that an additional operating system, the 64-bit Windows, or is that something that I can...
It depends on what Windows he gave you. If you have the Windows box, it will usually have two different disks in it, 32-bit and 64-bit. What we found that when we buy the OEM versions from Windows, it's or. You get 32-bit or 64-bit.
Nice.
But the retail box comes with both. So if you don't have a Windows 64 install disk, you'll have to buy that separately.
Okay.
But if he gave you the retail box of Windows, then you should have both disks in the box. But unfortunately, you can't...
I don't have a box at all.
Oh, he should have given you a box with the Windows disks and license code on it, no matter what version he put on.
Okay, maybe I do have it somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
And did you say this? It was doing this freezing since you've got it, or is it?
No, I got it initially last April, and I'm sorry, last July, and maybe towards the beginning of this year, January, February, around that time. Is when it started with the freezing up.
It sounds like something got corrupted.
Yeah.
But what that is hard to know.
Yeah, without doing the scans. Yeah. Kind of shooting in the dark.
Yeah, I do the malware bytes, running that, regularly, and CC Cleaner, and a couple other stuff I found from MajorGeeks.com.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't seem to figure this one out.
You might want to check your task viewer on Windows, Activity Monitor on Mac and Task Viewer on Windows, to see if there's an unusual process that you don't recognize. In the Task Manager, you can sort by how much CPU use it's taking. And hopefully, when it freezes, you'll be able to see what process is using all of the CPU or most of the CPU power and causing it to freeze. That may help Like I look at my machine. Yeah, I look at my machine now, and Shockwave Flash is taking 110% of my processor.
Nice.
Because I'm streaming the video.
Right.
So that might point you in a direction to move to see what program is actually freezing the machine.
Okay.
All right.
And the task manager, you're talking about.
Right. Control Alt Delete and bring up task manager.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, we gotta go. We're gonna take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour. Sound bites. Member supported. Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And again, let me point out what an astonishingly great job Steve did last week as the sole sound bite here during the show.
In a major panic because you got called away. Of course, mine was scheduled because of work.
Right.
I got to hang out with some close to 200 kids woodworking, and you know how much I hate that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Stuff.
What a terrible day for you. Oh,
kids,
been.
And it was, kids with sharp tools?
No, hammers. Well, no, just hammers and screwdrivers.
Yeah.
But and they all were
when
were,
all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Toes, elbows, knees.
These kids, though, they get into it so good. I mean, you can see, there's one kid that'll be starting to work on a project, and he does it every time. So I always watch him. He sits there and bites on the tip of his tongue, and he's sitting there pounding it. I'm thinking he's going to bite the tip of his tongue off for sure one of these times. You know, normally there's just a few nail holes, but boy, if we get into some project that's got a lot of nails, I'm worried about this kid. But no, it was a great day. It was sunny out, and like Nick said, Steve, of course, did a stellar job.
Yeah, great job. Great job.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to Brian for being able to fill in. Dennis was going to come too, but he got sick at the last minute.
Oops. Yeah. Well, that's great, though.
Yep. Well, he did great. You did great. It was terrific. Mm-hmm. All right. The Google Hangout is working again.
Cool.
What I did was I just disabled every single one of my Chrome extensions. And suddenly I had the ability to pop stuff up again. So
some extension was messing up.
Yeah, something was not right. So that's all fixed now. So that's up, and we're going back to the phones. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Welcome, Victor. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm on the new Soundbites website right now, and it's very, very good. That being
Thank
said,
you.
Where I really, really miss from the old site is all the links that Steve posted. The new site's only got a few. I understand that because it's only been up just a little bit. But are there any plans of putting the old ones back on, or are they on the site already and I just can't find them?
No, they're not on the site right now. Some of them will come back up fairly regularly. A lot of them were just old. I'll think about that. I don't know that I have them all.
Yeah, the actual links that were on the old server are gone
because
the old server died.
Right. And the fellow who was supposed to be backing it up apparently was not. So... and that's my fault. I trusted him. I should not have. I get it.
Trust but verify.
Yeah, and I trust it and did not verify, and it's my fault. But they'll come up. Trust me, they'll come up again as time goes on.
Archive.org. Let me see. Were they archiving our website?
Oh, there's an idea. But we'll see what we can do about that.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep. Yeah, it would be nice if we could bring some of them back.
We lost a lot of stuff.
We did lose a lot of stuff. Luckily, I had all the photos, the ovals and the movie posters.
Yeah.
So those are still up. So that's nice.
Aww. Oh, because I spelled it wrong.
Yeah, you have to put that T in there.
That E.
Oh, the E. Yeah, but that's it's. I take full blame. I did not verify, and I should have. I had other things to do, and I let it slide, and there you are.
It was called The Life.
Yeah, well, it's still...
Yes, they are there at archive.org.
Yay.
So now, do we copy them all over, or do we just link to archive.org?
Yeah.
Oops.
What's the last date?
2012, 4/28.
That's about a year ago. Okay, that's... It's the Wayback Machine. It's a year
ago.
Let's
see if I can go forward. No, that was the...
Is it
April 29th? That's the most recent...
We were just too much for archive.org.
Well, that's interesting. Well, because on well, it's the sub. On the home page, the last one was the Google Now question, which was only a couple of weeks ago. But nested pages down.
Right, went back a year.
Right. It's better than nothing.
Better than nothing. All right, our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Scott. What's up?
Yeah, I have two questions. The first one is, do you really want to have a Second Life meeting on Mother's Day?
My response is, oh, heck no.
Okay, so I'm going to cancel that.
Yeah.
And the second is, for Steve, do the new iPads and iPods have the same connectors as my iPhone 5?
Yes, the iPhone 5 and the iPad mini and the iPad 4 and the iPod 5th generation. So the latest versions of each device have the new smaller lightning connector. Apple is still selling the iPad 2, which has the 30-pin connector, and the iPod Touch 4th generation, which has the 30-pin connector. So they're keeping the old models in the product line to be cheaper. But the latest versions of each one do have that new lightning connector.
Great. Thank you. That's all I have.
All right. There is an adapter. There's a 30-pin to lightning adapter that will work with many of your old 30-pin accessories. Because that's the big criticism, is I've got all these docks and speakers and this is and that's is that now you need this adapter. From what we've been reading, it works with devices that need power and devices that use analog audio, but does not work with devices that use digital video. So if you had a video adapter to plug your iPhone into a television, you need to get the new Lightning video adapter. But every time they change connectors, it's annoying. That 30-pin connector lasted 10 years, which is an eternity in the computer world. Yeah.
Particularly for Apple.
Yep. One of the neat things about the Lightning connector is it's ambidextrous and bidirectional. So it doesn't matter what way you put it in. That was always the thing about even USB cables. You try it one way, it doesn't work. So you turn it over, try the second way, and it doesn't work. So you turn it over, and try it the third way, and it works.
Every time.
Every time. The Lightning connector doesn't matter which way is up. It assigns the pins on the fly, so you plug it in any way you want, and it works.
Nice. Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Linda from...
Lost her.
Maybe our next caller will be Linda from Greece, but we'll wait a moment for that.
Linda, hold on.
So, yeah, Steve will actually put a link up to the links on the Wayback Machine at archive.org.
I have a feeling, though, that they'll slowly age out, so I'm going to see if I can... I can at least get a screenshot of them.
Right.
Whether I can get the actual code or not is another question.
Right, right, right.
We're good.
All right, it's Linda from Greece. Hi, Linda, what's up?
Hi, I want to give kudos to Steve for last week. He did a fantastic job.
He really did.
Thank you, Linda.
He really did.
I mean, Steve, you know, hey, Nick and Dave, you can leave anytime you want to. Steve,
no,
did a good
no.
job.
All right, see ya. Bye-bye.
I kept forgetting.
All right, you guys are on your own. You can handle
okay,
the board.
I got a question. I got the new Jelly Bean for my phone. How do I set up Google Now?
Google Now on Jelly Bean.
You don't need... Well, it doesn't work now if you scroll up. If you swipe up from the very bottom of the screen, nothing happens?
No. I've got to go into this a Google search thing that I got to hit, and Google Now will come up. But I get all these sample cards, and I'm going, okay, what do I do now?
That's a lovely question. I did not have to set it up on my... on my phone. That's a very good question.
Isn't there like a settings where you put in your Google account and everything sets itself up? Mail
well,
and calendar
that's the theory.
And now, yeah.
Everything sets itself up.
Okay.
With your Google account, you have to log in.
Yeah, I did that. I did that, but it says Google. It says Google Now. You know, it says swipe the cards, and I'm going. I do what?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, you have. All right. Yeah. It might not be quite as obvious as it is. if you have, you can start it by, hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You can start, have you been able to start it at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I get certain things when I'm, you know, when I'm away from home. But, okay, now you said one time that you set up in your Google Calendar and it reminded you of things. I can't figure out how to do that.
All right, hold on. Let's step back a step. When you first run it, when you first get into it, you can sweep up from the lock screen or from the home screen, and it should open up. But the first thing it would do is lead you through the setup.
Okay. Well, what happens now is I can't scroll up. I hit, there's a Google search button that I have to,
right.
And Google Now will show up.
Right. And when it does, is it actually showing you stuff, or is it?
No. It's showing me stuff. I've got my phone right here, and I'm a little not sure what's going on. But it shows me stuff. It shows like today's weather and all that.
Yeah.
But it says swipe this way to get information. So I went into the setup thing and I turned traffic and everything on. But then it just keeps showing the sample things, and every time I hit that, it takes me back to the settings screens.
All right. If you're in the settings screen, at the bottom of the settings screen, or you have to go through the whole setup, the last card will say something about not now or I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in. I hit that.
Okay.
It gives me certain things, but as far as, you know, traffic and all that, and trying to set up my appointment.
Okay, on each of those cards,
uh-huh.
The traffic card, the weather card, the public transit, it should give you the choice of sample cards or settings.
Yeah, okay. I hit the settings, and it takes me back to the settings screen, and I say, well, it's already on. You know, that's why I'm totally confused.
I'm not seeing what, I don't see what you're seeing, so.
Yeah, I wish they had a class on Google Now.
How long ago did you set it up?
Oh, I got Google Now maybe 2 or 3 days ago.
Okay, then it's still, well, it may still be learning what's going on with your system.
Okay, as I'm talking to you, I'm Google search. Okay, now I can't find it now. See, now I'm, okay, let me see now if I can find it here.
You probably Google, set up Google Now.
All right.
And they're...
Hey, I've got Google Now on. Okay, it's on my... Right now, it's showing me sports. It's showing me the temperature. It says local service is off. Every time I turn... I'm hitting settings. Local access, yes. Local access is on. Okay.
It sounds to me like it's actually working. What isn't it doing that you expect it to be doing? It's showing you the sports you want to see.
Yeah.
It's showing you the weather you want to see.
Yeah, it says show more cards. So I'm hitting that, and I don't know what I'm supposed to be seeing.
You are seeing what you're supposed to be seeing. The idea is this: Google Now does two things. It lets you search using natural language.
Uh huh.
So I can say to. I can open up Google Now and say, who's won both an Academy Award and has an MBA from Harvard? And it'll come back and say Natalie Portman. It'll just do that for you.
Yeah.
In addition, you can set certain things that you will expect to see, like weather, by looking at the weather. And it learns as you go along that you want to see the weather, that you follow certain sports teams, so it's showing you sports.
Right.
But
how do I set up the calendar? Because you said to me, how do I set up the calendar? Because you said to me, it says to you, you better leave now. How do I set that up? That's what I've been trying to figure out.
All you do is put things in the calendar.
Create an appointment.
You create an appointment in the calendar.
With an address on it.
And it has to have an address.
Okay.
So it knows.
And you have to have location settings on your phone.
I got it on.
So what you do is you set, for example, let's say you're going to go to Marketplace Mall. We need someplace with an address. You're going to a party at a friend's house.
Uh-huh.
And you put in, you say, you know, party at friend. And then in the address, you actually put their address.
Okay.
That way, what Google Now will do is keep track of where you are, what the traffic situation is like, and tell you when it's time to leave.
Okay. Because this is fairly new to me. That's why I figured I'd call you guys. So now, Google Calendar. So that's what I'm trying to say.
I posted a link for a video from the Android Authority on how to set it up and what you can do with it. Take a look at that and see if that helps too.
Yep.
Okay.
We have to go, Linda. It should be fairly intuitive on how to set something up in Google Calendar. Just tap
I'm
on a
trying.
Space.
Thanks. And again, thanks, Steve.
Okay, thanks. We're going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, but not as long as last week. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of the month. On Thursday, Microsoft said it will issue 10 security updates next week, two rated critical to patch 33 vulnerabilities, including the zero-day bug that has been used by cyber criminals to poison watering hole websites and attacks aimed at U.S. government workers. Man, there may not be enough buzzwords in that sentence. IE is always critical, of course, and we're always critical of IE, and we expected at least one update this month. What was surprising was the IE8 fix. The remaining 8 updates, called bulletins by Microsoft, were pegged as important on the firm's threat scale and will provide patches for Windows, several applications in the Office family, and for multiple communications products, including Link, with a C, Microsoft's enterprise-grade instant messaging platform. I remember when Access was Microsoft's messaging platform. 3 of the Windows security updates will affect Windows 8 and Windows RT, Microsoft's newest operating systems. One of the trio will patch only those two editions. But the two updates aimed at IE are the ones to deploy immediately. Of the pair, the most important will be Bulletin 2, which will patch the zero-day in IE disclosed last week by several security firms when they analyzed attack code planted on the U.S. Department of Labor website. Last Friday, Microsoft confirmed the IE8 vulnerability when it issues a security advisory. Wednesday, the company published an automated fix-it tool to protect IE from in-the-wild exploits. The tool was based on a shim, a term used to describe an application compatibility workaround, a tactic Microsoft has used in the past to ward off active browser attacks, because shim is a much friendlier term than workaround, which implies something's bad and you're fixing it. Last December, Microsoft released a shim to block attacks exploiting a then-unpatched bug in IE6, IE7, and IE8. Those attacks surfaced when security researchers spotted drive-by exploits hosted on the website of the Council of Foreign Relations, a nonpartisan foreign policy think tank with offices in New York and Washington, D.C. Those attacks, the Council on Foreign Relations attacks, those originating in the Department of Labor website were dubbed watering holes attacks, so named because the exploits were planted on sites frequented by the targeted users. Those targets were workers and officials in the U.S. Department of Energy involved in nuclear weapons research. So, are you ready for another patch cycle from Microsoft? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will be happy to talk to you about that. If you are a government worker who spends their time at watering holes, stop!
You think?
Or don't use Windows.
No lie there.
The International Space Station.
You may want to define what a watering hole is. In computer terms.
It isn't. It's an office term. It's where people go, they gather and talk about stuff.
the latest gossip. The latest gossip.
Remember back when there used to be a water water fountain, a water cooler.
Yep.
They don't have those in a lot of places anymore. So you know, people gather around the refrigerator, or whatever. But now they're all doing it online. People work from home, whatever. So they have places they can gather the watering hole. The watering hole, of course, is where you go to drink after work. So that's a whole different story.
It's just like a friend of mine, I was telling her, blue skying. You know, the term blue sky? She'd never heard of it.
Yep.
No, really?
We live in Rochester. We don't know what a blue sky is.
We're getting close to the point where nobody's going to know what clockwise means anyway.
This is true.
So, that, yeah, that's a whole different thing.
Although anti-clockwise just sounds weird.
Right.
To us.
Wittershins.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound any better. The other thing is, I don't think it was one of our news items, but the International Space Station is changing their software from Windows XP, good idea, to Linux.
Smarter idea.
Yeah. They just you won't
get stuck up there in space.
Yeah.
Now they haven't really sent. They've more or less stopped work on that. I remember the years while they were building it, it seemed like every year they were sending up another module to add on to it. And
yeah, America doesn't go to space anymore.
Yeah, partly we don't have a lifting body.
Right. America doesn't go to space anymore. We used to be pioneers, and we used to be at the forefront of technology, and we used to do all kinds of things that we don't do anymore. And one of them is we don't go to space anymore.
So we have to rent time on Russian rockets.
Right.
Well, I remember
they are fixing the International Space Station today. So our prayers and our thoughts go with the.
But yeah, that's pretty much
doing a spacewalk.
The construction is pretty much completed.
I thought there was still a lot more to add. I remember.
Well, they can always add more.
Well, there was a whole bunch of stuff they were going to add. They were going to turn it into a huge space station.
Yeah.
But America doesn't do that anymore, so we bowed out.
And budgets have been cut so much, there isn't much left.
Yeah, they can find ways to waste it on themselves.
Exactly. You know, if the choice is between pork or actually spending it on good things, we opt for pork every time, so...
NASA does have a nice video channel, spacestationlive.nasa.gov, for live videos from the space station. One of the neatest videos I saw recently was every now and then the station has to boost up into a higher orbit because of atmospheric drag, slows it down, and it falls. And what's really cool is when the station is boosting, the astronauts don't, unless they're holding on to the station. So they have pictures of them in one of the long corridors. They let go of the sides of the wall, and it looks like they're falling down through the station.
Yep.
No, the station is accelerating away from them, and they're standing still, and the station's going until they hit the back wall.
And then takes it with them.
Then they swim forward again and let go and fly
cool.
back. Yep.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Oh, was it the washcloth one the other day? Did you see that one?
Yes.
So, it was a school, elementary school,
they,
maybe.
They
question.
do these videos. Let me set this up for you. They do these videos where students send questions. How do you blah 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 in space? How do you brush your teeth in space? Yeah. And so one of the kids wanted to know, how do you wash in space?
And what happens when you wring out a washcloth?
Right.
So I'm thinking, well, if you wring it fast, I could see the water spraying away. But, well, should we tell them or let them watch the video?
Watch the video.
It's really cool. And Commander Chris Hadfield,
we should put that link there.
Really,
to the,
really
watching
cool.
the space station.
He's going to put it.
I'm going to see which one
right
do
now.
I do. I want to find the official NASA one.
Yeah,
that's the good one. It's pretty amazing stuff, and they do these things mostly for kids. I personally find them fascinating since I have the intellect of a 7-year-old, so I enjoy it.
I still remember the last one that I really watched was when they were taking the solar panels and unfolding those, and they were rolling them out, and they got stuck.
Yep.
They were they might have to send a crew out there, but they tried again, and then all of a sudden they got them to unfurl, and...
Yep.
It's very so cool. amazing, though, that something hasn't punctured through those.
They have lots of little holes in them.
Micrometeorites.
Yeah.
But I mean, a bigger holes. One.
I found one from the Canadian Space Agency because Commander Hadfield is Canadian.
Yes. Yes. The CSA, the Canadian Space Agency. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, who's patiently waiting while we chit-chat about the International Space Station. How are you, Steve?
Well, the International Space Station is going to be much more interesting than my question. I'll tell you that.
We'll be the judge of that.
Well, I got myself into trouble, which is what you expect.
Sure.
A little background. A few years ago, I had a friend put a white box together for me. The hard drive went flunky. He actually took it off, formatted it, put it back in again. Now I'm trying to set everything back up. I'm running Windows 7 Ultimate, and I have sound problems. I have, Windows Media Player works fine, but when I try to run Audacity, it shows no input devices at all. I have a program called Dragon Naturally Speaking, and that comes up when I launch it. It says it cannot find multimedia driver. Check to see if your computer has a sound card or if multimedia wave-in is. So where I got even deeper is I reloaded or got new Realtek drivers, updated drivers for my Realtek sound, and I have no idea how to get anything except what I can get through Windows Media Player to work.
You installed the drivers, they went in okay, no problems.
Well, they work for Windows Media Player, but I cannot, when I look at sound in the system, it gives me speakers, Realtek High Def Audio, that's the one that actually works.
Mm-hmm.
I have the option of Realtek Digital Output, and Realtek Digital Output Optical. If I use either one of those, I can hear nothing.
Well, because you would have to plug into that particular port on the back of the Realtek card.
Right.
And the digital output would require digital speakers.
Okay, so I'm on speakers that way.
But your regular speaker jack is plugged into the little green port in the back.
Correct.
Yeah, the green is usually the analog port.
Yep.
And your speakers are turned on and their power light's working?
Yep. Nothing's muted?
The speakers work when I'm using Windows Media Player.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you said that.
But I can't. Audacity says there's no input device. My Dragon Naturally Speaking, which actually did work until I upgraded the drivers, I get nothing. I can't make either of these programs work, and I need them both.
And there's no bangs in the device manager that says they're not working?
No, none.
In Audacity, at least in the version I have, which of course is not loaded on this machine, you have a choice of what you use for input.
Right, but there's nothing listed. When I click on the drop-down boxes for input device, there is nothing there.
Have you tried removing the thing?
That's a good idea.
Remove the card from Device Manager and let it refind it?
I haven't thought of that.
Yeah.
Is this a separate card or built into the motherboard?
I believe it's part of the motherboard. Okay. I'm running a Rampage 3.
Yeah, because we used to say physically remove the card, let it boot, and then put the card back in and let it boot and find it.
But you had to go in, turn off the video, so in the BIOS.
Yeah, but removing it from Device Manager and then rebooting should redetect and reload the drivers.
If I look under sound, video, and game controllers, what it says is NVIDIA High Definition Auto. It's got 1, 2, 3, 5 options for that.
NVIDIA is your video card.
Mm-hmm.
Could be your audio card.
They do audio too?
Yes.
So do I have a problem?
So then is Realtek Audio. He wouldn't have two different audio cards, would he?
Well, here's the question. Do you see a Realtek Audio in the system?
I don't see it under sound, looking at Device Manager.
On the back of the computer, do you have two possibilities where you could hook up speakers?
One in line with the motherboard ports?
And the other off, say, a card slot.
Give me just
Because maybe you do have two audio cards.
Back behind the computer.
Because some machines will do that. You get very basic audio on the motherboard, mm-hmm. and then you can put a better audio card into one of the slots.
It's very common.
Especially if you do audio recording and you want better than basic.
Yep.
No, I basically have just the single input for plugging in the audio.
Who told you had Realtek audio instead of NVIDIA?
When I go to control panel and look at sound, it basically lists the Realtek. It brings up the Realtek speaker systems.
All right, but when you look, okay, and of course that actually works with
the Windows Media Player.
Windows Media Player. I don't know. This, to me, is something somebody's going to have to actually sit in front of and play with. There's
about a million possibilities. Yeah.
But I would start. Look through the rest of Device Manager and see if Realtek is in there somewhere. If it is, remove it.
Okay.
Or alternately, it's not a card. It's built into the motherboard. That's what I would start with.
All right.
I'm sorry. I don't have anywhere else to go with that. It's... I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, without actually seeing it, it's tough.
Right, somebody's got to sit in front of it and see it, I'm afraid.
If I look at system devices...
I got to go. Okay. We got to go. We got to take a break, I'm sorry. Okay. We're going to take a break, a semi-longish break, while our underwriters get to say their thing, and then we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of Soundbites. On February 27th, in the middle of the afternoon, a 16-year-old girl was walking through San Francisco's Mission District when she was ordered at gunpoint to hand over her cell phone. The robbery was one of 10 serious crimes in the city that day, and they all involved cell phones. Three were stolen at gunpoint, three at knife point, and four through brute force. Incidents of cell phone theft have been rising for several years and are fast becoming an epidemic. IDG News Services collected data on serious crimes in San Francisco from November to April and recorded 579 thefts of cell phones or tablets, accounting for 41% of all serious crime. On several days, like February 27th, the only serious crimes reported in the daily police log were cell phone thefts. In just over half the incidents, victims were punched, kicked, or otherwise physically intimidated for their phones. And in a quarter of robberies, users were threatened with guns or knives. This isn't just happening in tech-savvy or tech-loving, I guess, San Francisco either. The picture is similar across the United States. In Washington, D.C., cell phone thefts account for 40% of robberies, while in New York City, they make more than half of all street crime. There are no hard numbers on which phones are most popular, but those most in demand by thieves appear to be those most in demand by users, iPhones. It's easy to see why the thefts are so rampant. Criminals can quickly turn stolen phones into several hundred dollars of cash, and phone users are often easy targets as they walk down the street engrossed in the screen and oblivious to their surroundings. It shouldn't be this way. With built-in satellite positioning and reliance on a network connection, it should be easier to track them down. So why is theft such a problem?
They go to that guy's house in Nevada, was it? A couple of weeks ago, we had the story about the guy whose house tends to be the center for all lost iPhones.
Yep. A big reason is that until recently, there's been little done to stop someone using a stolen cell phone. Carriers quickly suspend phone lines to avoid thieves running up high charges, but the handset itself could be resold and reused. It's made easier by modern smartphones that accept SIM cards, which were introduced to allow legitimate users to switch phones easily. In Washington, D.C., a series of crime prevention posters showing photographs of people using cell phones in public. In the pictures, the cell phones were overlaid with an image of a $100 bill, and the tagline, "This is how thieves see you on the street." So are you careful when using your cell phone in public? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it was almost one of the things in the early days of iPhone is people would be known by the white earbuds. So now we're hearing stories of people buying different colored headphones just so you don't think they have an iPhone.
Yeah.
And then there's the people who wear the $700 Beats.
Yeah, that's
headphones.
There have been people reportedly killed for their sneakers.
Right.
Some fancy sneakers.
Right. I have a $30 pair of headphones, and I use whatever dollar store has for headset earphones.
They break, you throw them away, buy a new one.
That's exactly right.
There was a thought that just escaped my head.
Yeah. Well, it didn't have a lot of company and there was lonely.
Yeah. The carriers.
CRS.
Yeah. See, I'm getting up there. I'm pushing 50.
Shut up.
from below. Not accelerating away from above. But the carriers almost want cell phones to be stolen because when a phone is stolen, the thief will activate a plan, typically, and the carrier gets money. And the person who got it stolen from will typically buy a new phone because now they have to pay full price because they're not starting a new contract.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the cell phone company's advantage to have stolen phones. But there has been there was actually just a report about that I read a couple of days ago. There is a national stolen cell phone registry. There've been a lot of call over the years for companies to have one, but it's always been tough to take on the legal responsibility that, you know, I could get mad at you and report my cell phone stolen or whatnot. But the registry apparently hasn't had much luck returning stolen phones. You know, people who steal the phone aren't going to look in the registry to see if it's stolen, and people who buy a used phone aren't going to think to look in it. So what it typically comes down to is service. You know, we do that when service machines are coming in, that when we put serial numbers into the system, we hope there's a flag there that will pop up and say it's been reported stolen. But then there's the legal issues. It's been reported stolen. Was it actually stolen? Was it just lost?
Somebody found it.
Is it found? Yeah. Was it a custody fight? Or was it someone just mad and reporting something stolen? So it's tricky.
Double-edged sword.
Sometimes we can tell when the person's name doesn't match any of the information in the machine.
You're right.
Typically, we get I just bought this used, and I need you to break into the password. No, call the person you bought it from and get the password. Oh, they don't remember. Too bad.
Such is life.
Show us a bill of sale, and you know, maybe we'll see what we can do. But yeah, that's
or have the previous owner call us.
Right. When you sell your computer, erase your stuff. Please.
Yeah, right.
We had a big presentation at CIDR this week from Rochester Regional Computing and Recycling and Recovery. Ewaste.com is a little easier. Charlie McKiernan, one of their senior vice presidents, who actually used to be CEO at Leon's. So we were joking and remembering, reminiscing about Leon's.
I remember Leon's.
But they do huge data security planning. Triple certified data security, the only one in New York, for dealing with businesses and hospitals, especially for destroying old computers and recycling data. And they showed us this giant shredder that they shred hard drives in. But when you buy a computer used, especially online from someone you don't know, and it comes with data on it, it's probably stolen because people who legitimately sell their computers will at least hopefully know to erase their own data.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind when you're buying something used.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Irondequoit. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, back on the 4th, I got Cook Happy. And I downloaded the Mixi DJ toolbar by accident. And I followed what was online to get rid of it. And I essentially, I think I've gotten rid of most of it. But according to Spy Hunter, which they said you should download this to search to make sure that you've got it all, because I used Revo uninstall to get rid of the stuff. And lo and behold, there's still like 183 whatevers that are attached that that Revo uninstall didn't get to.
Did you dance the entire Security Tango?
Not yet.
You should.
All right. And because I did partial, I said, well, let me do Malware and SpyBot, you know, and see what they can get rid of. And they got rid of some. But I said, well, I probably should go through and do the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I tried going back to a date before I downloaded these things. And, of course, it was too late. By the time I realized what I had, they were already gone.
One of the problems with going back is that viruses don't pay any attention to that. Once they've installed themselves, they don't uninstall just because you went back. They don't care. So that's never going to work.
So in other words, if I the other thing I was going to try to do was get I did make up repair disks in that back when I first got the computer.
Well, that will wipe out all your stuff, and that certainly will cure the problem.
Yeah.
But let's start by dancing the Security Tango and dance the whole thing. Remember, the reason I call it a dance is because skip a step, you're stumbling around.
I know the song.
Yep.
You got to start from the beginning. You got to do it right through the end. Follow it step by step. Yep. Don't miss a step because then you're not dancing.
There you go.
And one of the things is that since this is a toolbar extension into the browser, you often have to go into each browser and disable the toolbar and remove it from inside your browser as well as its own uninstall.
So do that first.
I did that. I followed what was online where there's a number of these things, how to get rid of it.
Right.
And they told go into this toolbar, go into this one. I followed them step by step to make sure I got rid of it. And
so you probably got rid of it, but has also downloaded 15 other things.
It's got hooks in there. I went through the Revo uninstall to get rid of the conduit thingy that it brought in with it. Anything that was downloaded on the date of that day that it was there, I dumped.
Yeah, Conduit has dozens of these toolbars that they all claim to do neat things, but under the hood, behind everything, they're installing more software. They're spying on what you're doing, so they have a very bad reputation in the tech community. But they put cool toolbars in your browser.
Yeah, making you think that's something that you really could use and take advantage of. And
quite often, you get them accidentally or inadvertently when you're trying to download something else.
What happened. I went through and I usually watch every screen and say yes or no, and if there's anything that says, do you want this, and this? No, I don't want any extras. I usually unclick them.
You can get this free thing.
And I don't want that, you know. But the thing is, this time I clicked on the next button, and it didn't seem to work, so I clicked again. Well, it made the next screen go flying by, and I just saw that it was one of those things where you have to check something.
Yep. Yeah, so definitely dance the whole tango. It sounds like you've gotten rid of the toolbar, but the ancillary stuff that came along with it is still hanging around.
Yeah. Like I said, when I did Revo uninstall, everything that said, you know, do you want to get, yes, get rid of that, you know.
But it's not going to, but see, the problem with Revo uninstaller is it will only uninstall things from the registry. And viruses don't put themselves in the registry. So there are still things hanging around that you need to get rid of. So dance the tango, you should be fine.
This is an interesting class of software because it's a legitimate program that does unwanted things.
Right.
And so it's hard for the uninstallers to know what
which is bad, what isn't.
Yeah.
where the Spy Hunter that I downloaded says, well, and download this, it's free. And I thought, well, okay, free. And I watched to make sure that I wasn't getting anything funny with this. But it seemed like every site that was talking about getting rid of these toolbars recommended this thing. So I says, well, it must be fairly safe. Well, yeah, it's safe. And all it did was say, yeah, you still got a whole bunch of stuff that's hanging on. But if you want to get rid of it, you can pay us $40.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and we'll activate and let you get rid of it.
Yeah, that's the freemium model. You get a taste for free, and then you have to pay to do anything useful.
Yeah.
We used to call that the cocaine model.
Right. First taste is always free.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm sitting going, well, I says, let me call the guys to find out, is it worth, you know, $40 isn't a lot of money to
No. Dance the Tango first. If that gets rid of everything, save your $40.
Well, that's what I kind of figured. Maybe you guys know about this.
Donate to the Tango website.
About a year ago, I had a stroke, and I haven't been able to listen to the program for a while. And I says, well, they probably have gone through this before with other people, because I'm sure this is not new.
No, so, well, we've gone through similar, you know, whatever you call it, whether it's Mixi DJ or Bonzo Buddy or any one of those things, they're all fairly similar.
Yeah, and so I said, let me see what they have to say.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, the only other thing was, you know how I discovered it?
How?
After that, I said, well, I'm going to go on here, I'm going to go open up a thing, and it screwed up Open Office. It screwed up a couple other things, including I cannot open up a new file folder.
Interesting. Yeah, it definitely brought a bunch of stuff with it.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely Dance the Tango, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. Any one of these things, nobody works alone anymore. You know, you download this, well, that's great. They gave you a free toolbar. How do they make money? Oh, wait, they let six or eight other companies pay them to piggyback on top of them.
Yep.
So, and that conduit does that all over the place.
And see, he said the key thing, that he was on one screen, he clicked on it. That's when the other thing was sneaking in. He got impatient, clicked on it again, and boom, the other screen went zipping by, thus not giving them a chance to do that. When that does happen to you, cancel out of it. Usually they'll confirm
everything.
If you're
lucky, usually. Yeah.
And if you actually do, if the download actually starts, then you don't have to install what's downloaded. Quite often the download will, when it finishes downloading, it will launch and let you install what you just downloaded. Don't. If you're not sure what you got or you missed a window when it was clicked, don't install that. Delete it and go back and download it again and read the windows again.
Right. All right, we are going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We continue to be the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Well, first I'd like to make a comment, kind of a cautionary tale. If somebody's going to go out, somebody has an older computer, desktop, and they're going to go out and buy a new one like I did, or in my case, refurbished, they need to pay attention to what ports are on the back, what the machine will accept.
Yep.
I have a VGA monitor, and I got DVI-D ports only on the back. So that's a problem. There's no PS2 port on the back, and I learned that you can't just buy a straight PS2 to a USB adapter. You got to have a little bit of electronics in between.
Yeah, a lot of those old adapters existed 10 years ago when we lost the PS2 ports and switched to USB, but they're very hard to find anymore.
Yeah.
part of the problem is waiting too long between computers, and you miss the transition machines. For quite a few years, there were machines that had PS2 and USB and VGA and DVI.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
we're seeing more and more machines are only coming with the newer standards. And the annoying thing with DVI-D is that it's digital only.
Mm-hmm.
If it was DVI-I, then you could plug a VGA adapter into it. And
I
still
did read that also.
Yep, but DVI-D is digital only. Fortunately, most monitors today are coming with DVI and VGA, and sometimes HDMI, but we're seeing more and more things not using the older connector. So yeah, you have to be careful when you're buying machines to see what ports are on there and what ports you need.
Yeah.
Or just throw away everything and buy it all new.
My monitor is like about 13, 14 years old. So
yep.
Yeah.
So what I won't keep you guys long, but this is what I'm ending up doing with the monitor. I did happen to have laying around a card, a video card, which with 1 gigabyte of RAM, and it's got both a GBA port and a DVI port. That'll take care of the monitor part, but it's. It says it's a PCI Express card, and it's got it fits into the PCI Express 16 slot on the new box.
Yeah.
Is it okay to use it then that way, even though it doesn't say PCI Express 16 on this
well,
video card?
What? No. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's PCI Express 1 and PCI Express 2. And then there's how many lanes the card needs. So a 16-lane card uses a lot of the PCI bandwidth because it's video. So you have to make sure that the slot on the computer supports 16 lanes. Or if it only supports 8 lanes, if the card will drop itself down to 8 lanes.
Well, this is a PCIe 2.something, and the computer does have the PCI Express 16, and the card fits mechanically perfectly into the slot.
So it should be okay. If the motherboard is 16, then the card can be up to 16. The card may only be an 8. That should be in the card specs as well.
It might only even be a 1, because I think that's why I bought it originally for the older machine.
But yeah, that could be, today a 1 card would be cheap, but back then it might have been expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the slots will back down to slower lanes. In fact, check your motherboard specs, because sometimes there's like one slot is 16, 2 or 3 slots are 8, and then 1 slot is 1 or 2.
All the other slots are much, much, much smaller. I mean, like really, you know, very few, not even close to the. But anyway, and then what I did because I want to keep my PS2 keyboard, I did end up going to a place called Cyber Guys, and bought. I think I paid like under $20. It's a PS keyboard to USB adapter. It's got some electronics in between.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I think it's at one point at work, we had about 1,000 of those, and we threw them away.
Oh, chat. Well, we're talking about eWaste.com. They have an electronics boutique store on eBay where they sell some of their old stuff that they get recycled in. Charlie was saying that they have a lot of trouble selling the old stuff. You know, they had 20-inch monitors for $10. Nobody wanted them because they were CRTs. But yeah, and the other side of this coin is you can get a new USB keyboard for under $20.
Right.
But if you really like your old PS2 keyboard, then sometimes the adapters are worth it to you.
Well, why did you throw away those ones, the PS2 to USB converters?
Because we didn't need them anymore. We didn't have any devices at work that had PS2 in them anymore.
Oh, I see.
Right. So we found a box of them, like a Quaker Oats box, but it wasn't Quaker Oats. Forget what it was. Big round box. Full of them. I mean, just packed to the brim. And I remember we used to leave it out and throw them in and throw them in because we'd take them out and throw them in. It was like, leave a penny, take a penny. Because we'd go, as we were buying new keyboards, they were USB, blah, 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 blah. But now we don't have any devices left in the building that are PS2, so we just threw them away.
And we have seen, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but a lot of those old PS2 keyboards with the big keys and the big switches that made the clackety clackety clack that everyone loved, we're seeing the USB keyboards now are thinner and smaller, and they don't feel the same. There is a company. No, that's not it. That's a typewriter.
Yeah, I've seen typewriters.
Typewriter
before.
Keyboard. There is a company that still makes one of those big old clackety USB keyboards.
Well, you know,
Steve Gibson on Security Now loves them.
They're better for you. The resistance it means that you type slightly differently and you are less prone to carpal tunnel.
Yeah. Well, the idea of the very thin keyboards is that you don't move your fingers as much and don't wear them out as much.
Unfortunately, it's how hard you tap that has a lot to do with it, and the resistance is enough that as you resist through it, you stop tapping. So by the time it actually does hit the bottom, you're not typing as hard. That's the same way as they now have those little devices you can set on the desk, and it laser paints a keyboard on the table.
Yep.
And you can type right on that. But that's not good for your hands either in the long run, because it's tapping on that thing all day long will eventually cause carpal tunnel as well.
Yeah. Well, I would prefer to keep my two. I've got two different USB keyboards. They're in very good shape. One's actually brand new, and it's still in a box. And I want to keep both of them, and I'm happy because they're bigger. You know, as you said, the keys are bigger. It's just easier. Yeah. I just am used to it. I'd like to keep them. So I'm going to try this this PS2 to USB converter with the little electronics in between. It's only a short, maybe 12-inch wire, but it's got, you know, it's got some sort of electronics.
A couple chips in there. Yeah. The other thing is parallel printers. The parallel port is long gone, too. So if you have an old parallel printer, you may end up needing to get a USB replacement.
My problem is...
And that's the other thing, too. A parallel to USB adapter is $100.
Wow.
A USB printer you can get for $50.
All right. I have a TV that I got from Woot. Not Woot. Yeah, it was a Woot-off, and so it's a refurbished television. It's nice. It's a lovely flat screen, 1080p, blah, 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 blah. It has one HDMI port.
Because it's probably an older generation.
Yeah, so if just I want to plug in my cable box and my Roku box and my DVR
and my Blu-ray player
or whatever.
Today you need six or seven.
You need six or seven. Yeah. You can buy...
Splitters.
Splitter. You can buy one of those little boxes.
I sold you a HDMI switch box, didn't I?
Yeah. I love my little HDMI switch box. So now I punch what I want to use, and I get beautiful video on everything, as opposed to great video on one, okay video on another, crappy video on the third. Which one goes where?
Whoops.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to, I hear you on that. The last thing I wanted to say, and the reason I bought another box and I could only afford refurbished, was because the Windows 7 boxes are disappearing, and I didn't want to go to Windows 8.
You and everybody else.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of rumors that 8.1 is going to bring the start menu back.
Yeah, it's
a rumor.
Yeah.
Well, on the beta,
the developer version does. If it makes it into the retail version, is going to be the question.
Yeah. Right. Well, they got it. I mean, they're facing, you know.
Yeah, but they're not happy about it. Some Microsoft bigwig just this morning posted a big thing saying, look, you people are all complaining about this, but some of us love it.
Well, good for them. Like I say,
this is the new way. Get used to it.
Then hello, this is a free country. You should be able to have choices.
Stop beating us up for not giving you what you want and take what we give you and shut up.
But you should be able to have the menu option. There's a thing called menu options, and you either go with the new look or the old look. Or give me a toggle switch.
And it's all based on the look. Nobody's complaining about the quality of the operating system.
No, not at all.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. The problem is that they're trying to throw this thing down your throat. The other problem... Steve, thank you very much. I think we're kind of Dennis, rather. Thank you very much.
Beat that one.
The big problem really is that Microsoft is trying to create an all-in-one solution, one-size-fits-all.
Mm-hmm.
Even Apple has figured out you have one operating system for desktops and laptops, and you have a second operating system for tablets and phones.
But they are merging. At the moment, with 10.8, you have a choice that you can do it the old way or you can do it the new way.
We're afraid
in the next version, they'll force you to do it the new way.
And I understand that, but I don't think it's right. I don't think you serve your community right by making them do things your way.
Yep.
I don't know that that's gonna that's gonna fly. I mean, we all did think Steve Jobs.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, I mean, hello, it's my dollars that's supporting that company. If you're not giving me the product I want, gee, that's even more incentive to go to another product.
Right. One of the reasons that more people are going to Linux and to Chromebooks and things like that, it does exactly what they want and nothing more on a Chromebook. With Linux, it takes a little getting used to, but once, you know, if you're not a tech savvy person, but once you're done, you have exactly what you want. If you like the bottom menu, like on a, Mac, mm-hmm. you can have that. If you yep. prefer to see regular menus, you can have that. If you prefer to see no menus, you can have that. If you want to right click in the middle of a blank space and have the menu drop down, you can do that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
A lot of choices.
A lot of choices. All right, back to the phones. We choose to talk to Tim from Penfield. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. Just one quick question for you today. When I go to YouTube, I'm getting this prompt in the video player that says this plugin is vulnerable, should be updated, check for updates, click here to activate the Adobe Flash plugin. So what I've discovered is that in not doing that, a lot of the nuisance ads in, don't come up, and my web surfing seems yep. to be a little bit faster. So I'm wondering, am I leaving myself vulnerable here? Should I not do this or what? It seems like there's some benefits to not having this.
Well, the problem with Adobe Flash is that it is horribly, horribly buggy. And it is open to more viruses than you can believe.
Like every week or two, another patch comes out.
Right. So if you don't upgrade, you are more susceptible to viruses.
Okay.
But you're right. It's a little faster and blah, 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 blah. I tend to use Chrome. It has its own Flash in it. And it's slightly different. I don't worry about updating or whatever. But a lot of places are going away from Chrome. I know people who are Flash free.
There's also a plugin called Click to Flash. What you're seeing is that ads also use Flash to display their little animation ads. I've used a program called Click to Flash. This is Safari on Mac only. Is that what you happen to be running?
Firefox.
Okay, there are similar plugins. It will block Flash, but gives you a little button that says "Click here if you really want to play the Flash." So it blocks Flash from loading and from playing, and then will, when you want to actually run a Flash video, like going to YouTube, it will still play.
I'm sorry, what does?
There's plugins. There's one for Safari called Click to Flash.
Okay.
And there are similar plugins for Firefox and Chrome that will stop Flash from running unless you actually want it. But we're also seeing some people will remove Flash from their computer completely, because many websites will detect that you don't have Flash and will switch to HTML5 or H.264, the newer technologies that have been replacing Flash. But where we still run into Flash is some of the old YouTube videos that are still only in Flash.
Oh, they're older YouTube videos.
Quite frequently, right.
Yeah,
most
generally.
Of the new YouTube stuff is being converted either to HTML5 or H.264. Which are our new video and coding standards.
Right. Gotcha.
Google
okay.
is doing that automatically
yep.
At YouTube, but the older stuff they haven't done yet.
And what the browsers...
Let me tell them there's one for Firefox. There's an add-on called Flash Block that does exactly the same thing.
For Firefox, yeah. What the browsers are now doing, Firefox and Safari, is if your Flash is out of date, it will block it for you, and you'll get this warning. Apple even goes so far as to stop loading Flash at a system level if your Flash is out of date, and tell you need to upgrade your Flash. Chrome has Flash built in and updates it itself, but it's sometimes behind because Adobe releases the new Flash and then Google has to add it into Chrome.
Awesome. Right. Okay.
All right, we have to take a break.
Help.
Thanks very much. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga.
Oh, he did it well. You're learning.
Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Well, I have a bit of advice that might help some people. Actually, I was yesterday. I was so wishing it was Saturday so I could call you to fix this problem. But here we go. I was trying to access YouTube videos yesterday, and none of them would come up at all. The YouTube page itself would come up where you could select from videos, but every time I would go to view a video, it would come up with 500 internal server error.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's special.
Yep.
And better yet, they give you this long, big hash of characters that's supposed to tell them what went wrong and all that. I noticed even after refreshing the page, every single one of them would be different a little bit, slightly. Yep. You know, they'd change some characters. Thought, boy, this is really weird. So I go over to this was in an Opera. I go over to Firefox. It works fine in Firefox. I'm going, I don't like Firefox as much as Opera. What can I do here? Well, you know, as I say, I disabled all the safeties, like turn off proxying, stop my JavaScript blocker, you know, disable all my user scripts, all that. Still, same thing. Holy moly. What the heck could be wrong with this?
Right.
I even went so far as to rename my .opera directory so it would start from scratch.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't really want to do that because, you know, I have probably hundreds, maybe even 1,000 settings I've made over the years of, you know, incremental changes to, I like this better and so forth.
Right.
Wow, that actually worked. When I start from scratch, Opera would play YouTube videos. That's fine. Thought, oh gosh, I don't want to, you know, redo everything I've done over the past, I don't know how long.
You're right.
So, what I ended up doing is thinking, what do people on Windows usually do when stuff like this screws up?
Reboot.
I went through and I deleted all the cookies that had a reference to Google.com or YouTube.com and tried it again, and wow, it actually worked. There was some cookie that it was sending to YouTube that it didn't want to interpret correctly to give me my video page. So, golly, you know, if you ever get that internal server, because I Googled that, and somebody even posted a video. Gee, like 1 in 5 of the videos I'm watching give me this internal server error. This is ridiculous, you know. I agree. You know, every time you send some sort of interesting cookie to Google, I'll bet the people that paid for advertising to be shown with those videos can't be really happy about that. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you ever have problems recently viewing YouTube videos, I would say try looking at the cookies you have and deleting all those. I mean, I forgot to say, I even went so far as to bring up a Wireshark session.
There you go.
Even though I had cookies turned off, it was sending a cookie, and I thought that was the clue that I needed. Hey, if I delete the cookie, it can't send a cookie, so, we'll try that.
Yeah. I've actually stopped watching, that's not true. I watch some YouTube videos, but if I really like the YouTube video, instead of bothering with trying to watch it in my browser, I use YouTube-DL, which is a Linux program that downloads it automatically in the best format that exists on YouTube. So I often get full screen 1080p video. So when it's something I'm really actually interested in seeing, I'll do that. I'll download it and watch it that way. And that way I don't even, it bypasses the browser entirely.
wow. Oh, well, I suppose, is that, I hate to say, I've been working with a nearly 10-year-old machine, so like 1080p video, a little tough for the GPU in it. Is there any option to that to say,
I use a website called KeepVid, and you paste your YouTube video, the URL, into it, and then it gives you all the different sizes that are capable. So you can get a small one, you can get a big one, you can get different sizes in between. And it will give you MP4s and FLVs, and so you get different formats to play with, too.
Oh, yeah, I found this user script, too, that allows you to do a lot of the same thing. It adds a drop-down menu to the page where you can get your MP4, WebM, and various formats and resolutions and all that. But have done that too. But if you go right to internal server error, that's a little tough.
One of the silliest things I found googling this error is YouTube videos for people complaining about they can't play YouTube videos.
Yeah,
I did look at one of those. It was basically somebody who probably stole a song for the background and put up all these various graphics. Didn't really show being done, but said up. You know, this is ridiculous, and 1 in 5 videos that I try and watch get this internal server. Why are you so stupid, YouTube? That sort of thing. It's all in text, like shown like a screen at a time. I thought that's kind of interesting. Yeah, a video does show why you can't see videos.
Yeah, right. That's funny stuff. All right, thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a great week. We're seeing that more and more. Everybody wants a cookie that does something wonderful for them. Like Facebook puts up cookies that spy on other cookies. But we're finding that they're starting to interfere with each other.
Yep. And I was just reading listening to a Security Now. All of those little social engineering buttons, the like button and the Twitter and Instagram and all those buttons, they talk to each other. So you go to some website and there's a Facebook like button on it. That lets Facebook know you were there. You don't even have to click on it. Just the fact that it's there, Facebook knows you went there. And so there's privacy issues are now been cropping up about too many websites know where you are.
Yep.
It used to be, what they call it? It used to be the ad tracking. We were afraid of ads tracking us. Well, now we've all got ad blockers and we know how to stop that. Now these social networks are blocking us. And there was I'm going to remember his name. A guy that used to work at DoubleClick and wrote all of the ad tracking software, wrote an anti-tracking software that blocks all of those little plug-in thingies, the social plugins. Let me find that and post it. So if you're concerned about that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, we've got one more person on the line. We've got Tom from Fairport. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi. When I was overtired OneNote and trying to do my Windows update, I think I got something called OneNote came true and installed on my computer.
Sure.
And then my computer got really slow, you know? And so when I went into MS Config and made it so it didn't automatically boot when you boot up your computer, I'm back to the better speed, you know, not the best, but, you know, better. What is OneNote, and how can I get rid of it?
Well, I'm not certain why you got OneNote, since it's a program that...
you have to purchase it.
You have to purchase. So.
Is it a single word with a capital N? Because maybe it's a fake OneNote. Because OneNote is a Microsoft program. You can buy it with Microsoft Office, or you can buy it separately. But it is a commercial program for taking notes. So you jot down notes, and it can synchronize through the Office share drive.
Yeah.
So you can synchronize your notes with your other devices.
It has some beautiful features, including handwriting recognition if you're on a tablet and stuff like that. It's a terrific product, but it doesn't come free. So I'm not.
It's strange.
I'm not entirely certain how you got it. Does it have an icon that's purple?
And there's an icon in my, you know, my taskbar. It likes to load something when, you know, you turn on your computer.
But what does that icon look like? Is it a purple thing that kind of looks like the other Microsoft icons?
No, not really.
With a capital N on it. It's a bunch of file folders with tabs. So yeah, you might have got a fake OneNote or something trying to trick you into thinking it was Microsoft OneNote.
Okay.
Yeah, I would start immediately by dancing the security tango.
Yeah, really slow down my system. So yeah, I was really suspicious. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, there does seem to be a virus that looks like its name is OneNote, and so what you want to do is to dance the security tango and see if you can get rid of it. It's fairly new, so I'm not sure that they've all caught up, but I think we'll see. We'll see. Dance the whole tango. I know that Malwarebytes by itself won't get rid of it, but dance the tango and see what happens. You may be, if it's a root kit, it may need to go to somewhere to take a look at it, but give that a shot. All right. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Call earlier and more often next week, Chicago Style Calling. We'll be back next week. Thanks to, I guess, what happened here? Okay, whatever. It seems my Hangout crashed again. But we'll be back here next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You have just spent 2 hours of your life, which you will never get back, listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. George is coming in next with some of the best German music you'll hear all week, and we'll be back next Saturday with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.